Adventures in Research.
Feed those furnaces! Feed them! Take coal to make steam, you lot! Shovel it in!
Yeah, coal. Throw in the coal. Leave your rifle away into those furnaces so the captain can sail full speed ahead.
That's steam.
What's the matter with you? Stoke them, you hear? All you lunch want to know is get some smoke.
This is Paul Shannon introducing another in a series of programs dealing with the thrilling adventures to be found in the field of scientific research, as told by the men of science themselves. And here is Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories, who brings you our story today.
Thank you, Paul, and hello, everyone. This is a story of a scientist who wrestled with a principle, put it to work, and disappeared. You've heard his name many times in these recent years. Well, you should, for he harnessed a powerful force of nature. His name?
Rudolf Diesel. I was born in Paris in the middle of the century just past. My parents had come from Bavaria. My father, descended from a long line of artisans, taught me early those principles of mechanics which he knew so well. In 1870, a war broke out between Germany and France, and we were forced to flee from Paris to England. The family was very poor then, and so they sent me for my support to a cousin who lived in Germany. He was a professor of mathematics, very conscientious, very stern. I won't forget those days. They were filled with knowledge and inspiration for me. My favorite teacher was Dr. Carl von Linde. Of course, you've heard of him. He pioneered in artificial refrigeration and discovered the commercial method for making liquid air in large quantities. He taught my class in thermodynamics. How well I remember his lecture on the science of generating power.
And so, gentlemen, it's a very gloomy outlook. Extremely gloomy. Look at the inefficiency of steam. With all due regard to Mr. Watt's engine, first, there is the coal. Nature's storehouse of energy. That must be shoveled into the furnace. It then must be burned to boil water, which raises the steam. Then you must conduct the steam through pipes to the cylinder of the engine itself, which pushes the rods that drive the wheels. Cumbersome, wasteful, costly. All factors being at their best, you get only 13% of all the stored up energy and coal. That's the best, mind you. Ordinarily, the highest yield will be about 10%.
His words touched off some spark within me, released a kind of personal energy, made me want to be the one who could create an engine that would work with more efficiency than steam.
And yet, we go on incapable of doing anything about it. Nature has a vast pumping engine that works with 100% perfection. The sun, a veritable power machine. No boilers, no pistons, no cylinders, no rods.
No boilers, von Linde said. I was filled with a new excitement. Hastily, I scribbled in my notebook the principle I had caught. Mechanical theory teaches us that only part of the heat in the fuel can now be utilized. And doesn't it follow from this that the utilization of steam or any kind of go-between is false in principle? The possibility suggests itself of putting the energy to work directly without a mediator. But how can this actually be done? That is the problem. Yes, that was the problem, and I was bound I'd find the answer, no matter how long it took. Well, I graduated from the school in Munich, but before I left, Professor von Linde called me into his study.
Rudolf, my boy, have you any plans for the future?
None, definitely.
My refrigeration company, which incidentally is doing quite well, is very much in need of a good agent in the Paris office. Do you think you'd like to go back there to fill that job?
Oh, it would be wonderful.
Then suppose we consider the contract made. We'll talk over the financial details later.
Working for Dr. von Linde was a pleasure. Within a year, I was appointed director of the company. But I did not forget the problem I had set for myself. And many a long night I spent over my drawing board, struggling to find the answer that would not come.
Rudolph, why don't you give it up?
Give up the engine? Don't be foolish, Oscar. There must be some way, and I'll find it, to utilize fuel with greater economy.
Well, other scientists have tried to find it. You've toyed with one idea after another, using ammonia gas as a fuel. Where did that get you? And if you do find a way, what then?
Oscar, there are two parts to an invention, the idea and the execution of it. Let me get the first part, and I'll not worry about the latter.
Very well. Could you spare a little time to join me in a pleasant afternoon? I've been invited to the home of a jewel merchant I knew rather well in Germany. They'd like to meet you, and you'll find them very pleasant.
Oscar was always a persistent fellow, so I agreed to go with him. I'm glad now I did, for there I met the girl I later married, Martha Flash, a tutor of French and English. Our first child, a son, was born in 1884, and within the next 5 years we had two more children, a daughter and my youngest son, Eugene. Then we moved to Berlin, where I took over the management of Dr. von Linde's office and continued in my search for the answer to my problem. And then, in 1890, 20 years after the lecture that inspired me, I found it.
Oh, Rudolph, you surprised
Martha, me. Martha, I think I've got it. I've calculated, I've figured, I've checked every one of my calculations, and I swear I have the answer.
To the engine? To conserve steam?
Not steam. No steam at all. Now listen. Beside the steam engine, there is an engine that burns gasoline. That is a little more efficient, but not nearly so efficient as mine, according to my figures. My engine will burn oil.
Oh.
I'll tell you how I hit on the idea. It came to me all of a sudden. In school, there was a little machine like a pop gun, a device to light cigars. I believe they call it a Polynesian fire syringe. It comes from the Far East.
But what has a cigar lighted to do with an...
Well, I'm coming to that. The way it works is this. Into the little cylinder of the lighter goes air, plain everyday air like we breathe. A plunger forces the air together, compresses it. Now, when air is compressed, it gets hot. And the greater the compression, the higher the heat.
So the fire...
The air in it becomes so hot, it ignites a little bit of combustible material. Result? Fire. Now, instead of starting an open flame to light a cigar, suppose we inject a drop of ordinary oil into the cylinder at just the right time, when the air is hottest. The oil should explode, forcing the compressing piston back. Oh, don't you see? That must be it. No coal, no fire, no water to boil, no steam.
I was sure my calculations were correct, and I immediately set about preparing a paper on the subject, describing the engine and its principle completely. It had a staggering title, The Theory and Construction of the Rational Heat Motor. The first half of my invention was done. The paper went out, and I waited for results. They came soon enough.
Ha! It's only a paper invention. I'm a practical engine builder. That sort of thing doesn't convince me.
Yes, it looks fine in the patent drawings. But when it's built, he'll find out that the old steam engine is cheaper, simpler, and more economical.
They couldn't see it. Refused to accept a paper invention. But I felt sure I was right. And with the help of a few close friends, scientific teachers I knew, we managed to enlist the financial aid of one of the biggest machine makers in the country. And we set about building the engine, the paper invention.
Oh, poor Diesel. I feel sorry for him.
Yeah, so do I. For years he's waited for this moment. I don't see how it will work.
Let's stand a little closer. Now, we'll turn this wheel, which builds up the initial compression...
Pump is hard to work. I'm glad Joseph is in charge of it.
Diesel has his hand on the oil injector valve. Look how excited he looks. His face is so red.
Ready now.
He's opening it.
Oh, look out! It blew up.
Mr. Diesel, are you hurt? Can you get up, Mr. Diesel?
Yes, yes, I'm all right.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Sorry, sorry. What's there to be sorry about, man? That's what I wanted to know. That proves we're on the right track.
After that, there were 4 years of experimentation, 4 years of building and testing. The second engine didn't blow up, but it ran for only a minute and a half. The third was a little better, and finally the last worked perfectly.
I can't understand it. It's amazing. Diesel's engine not only works, but he's right. That cheap fuel delivers 30% of its energy in it.
Well, even a practical engineer can be fooled, you know. Those scientists have to be right sometime.
We formed a company and commenced the manufacture of the engine. The diesel motor, Martha proudly called it. By 1913, it was furnishing power and light to many communities, powering vehicles and naval vessels. Danson took it with him on the Fram to the polar regions, and then an ominous rumble of coming war began clouding the horizon. I was called to England for a conference with the Admiralty relative to using the diesel engine in submarines. I had arranged to meet two of my colleagues, George Carrels, a fellow engineer from Belgium, and a Mr. Luckman at Ghent. On the 26th of September, I motored with my son, Eugene, to Frankfurt, and then spent two wonderful days with my wife and daughter, excursioning through the hills, a real holiday. Eugene saw me to the station where I boarded the train for Ghent, and I was on my way. It was the last farewell to my fond family.
Ah, fine dinner, gentlemen.
Yes, Luckman, they serve good meals aboard some of these channel steamers. Don't you agree, Diesel?
Okay. Oh, yes, the meals is fine.
Shall we stroll around the deck a while before we retire?
Why not? Increase the appetite for sleep.
Oh, the channel's calm tonight. You'll have no trouble.
We walked for quite a while, several times around deck. I don't recall the conversation too well, the usual thing. And then, sufficiently tired, we said goodnight and retired to our individual staterooms, agreeing to meet on deck next morning when we should be in Harwich. Now, that night seems very long ago.
Passengers are requested to disembark immediately.
Where could Diesel be, Luckman? We've been here over 15 minutes.
I'm wondering myself, Carlos. He certainly couldn't sleep through the confusion of docking.
Well, we can't wait here for him all day. Let's have a look in his stateroom and see if he's still there.
Oh, good idea. Come on.
That's funny. He doesn't answer. Where could he be?
Try the door. See if it's unlocked.
I say there, Diesel.
He isn't here.
Look. His bed. It hasn't been slept in all night. This is serious. Something is definitely irregular. Come, we'll find the captain.
All over that channel steamer they searched. Luckman, Carroll, the captain, the crew. But no trace of Rudolph Diesel was found. Nor has any trace been found in these many years that followed. Somewhere between France and England, Rudolph Diesel completely disappeared.
Whether he was a victim of some enemy that struck at him during the night, or whether he brought his own life to an end, no one knows. According to the writings of his son, Eugene, Diesel had speculated unwisely to promote his engine, and rather than face impending bankruptcy, ended his life in the restless waters of the English Channel. It is unfortunate that Rudolph Diesel never lived to see the day when his engine would grow into a major role in supplying power and transportation for the world. For his engine is producing today as even he might never have dreamed it would.
And we are reaping the harvest of Rudolph Diesel's adventures in research. The story you have just heard, titled The Paper Invention That Worked, is another in a series of adventures in research told by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories.